Welcome to Real Deal Recovery, where the focus is topic-based and centered on physical and emotional recovery from drugs and alcohol or any other self-destructive behavior. Here's your host, Stephen Girard.
Welcome to Real Deal Recovery. As most of you know, I like to have the guests come up with the topic, which reminds me, if you have a topic that you'd like to see on the podcast, or perhaps there's a guest you think would be stellar, just shoot me an email at realdealrecoverypodcast@gmail.com. Now that I have that out of the way, we have Willie. Willie came up with the topic of the steps, very adventurous of him. If you've been through the steps formally, you know that they provide a lot of relief and freedom from the bondage of self. It's going to be great to hear Willie share his experience on the steps. Willie, welcome to Real Deal Recovery.
Thank you.
Great to have you with us. Before we get to our topic, could you give us a bit of your background prior to getting clean?
Well, I was just spent most of my life in Phoenix and Scottsdale, Arizona, and just went through high school. I was a jock in high school and then went to junior college for a couple of years, and then I went into the food and beverage business, and have been in the food and beverage business about half my life, and just proceeded to try and keep a roof over my head while I was behaving, in my mind, like a social drinker and a recreational drug user. And, you know, that was my business, and as long as I could pay my rent, I felt everything was fine.
Could you give me a bit of your unmanageability?
Well, you know, through the course of 20 years from the time I was 40, or from 20 to 40, I went through four relationships and was a failure in all four. And finally, at age 39, I went to a recovery meeting. And but like I said, I just believed, because I could maintain my employment, that I didn't have a problem. I mean, I had financial problems and I had relationship problems, for that was obvious, but you know, drugs and alcohol were not my problem. So, you know, but I finally got frustrated. I was having a lot of financial difficulties, and I went into a recovery room.
The topic for this podcast is the steps, but the most important step is the first step. That's one we really need to hang our hat on. How did you bust through your denial? Because it sounds like you were really wrestling with a number of issues, Willie.
Oh, yeah, I was cloaked in denial, and so because, there again, because I could keep a roof over my head, I had a great deal of difficulty accepting that I was an addict. And so I came in and out of recovery for 7 or 8 years, basically mostly out. You know, I'd come in for 30 days or 60 days, and my life would improve. You know, I'd go to a lot of meetings, and I wouldn't use, wouldn't pick up, and then I thought, well, you know what, I got this, I can handle this, thanks for the information, you know, bunch of lovely people in those meetings, but I'll be fine now, thanks for the information, I'll handle it from here myself. And of course, I found that did not work, that plan did not work, and that was just like my attempts to manage and control my drug use. You know, I mean, I didn't get in trouble every time I used, but if I'm honest and I look at my track record, when I was using, that's when I would get into trouble. So that's what I finally started to have to accept and really be able to embrace and work that first step on a daily basis.
Did you have a specific aha moment or a situation that happened that really said, look, I'm finally putting these drugs down?
Well, you know, like I said, I came in and out of recovery, and so unfortunately I had to bounce my head off the curb several times. You know, I wasn't smart enough to be a criminal. I never went to a penitentiary, but I would end up in handcuffs periodically in the county jail, overnight or week, 10 days at a time, you know. And so, no, it was just basically I couldn't stand the man in the mirror any longer. I just had it with Willie, and the way I was living, and I was desperate to really do something about my recovery.
A lot of newcomers wrestle with the concept of a higher power. Was that an issue for you when you came in?
You know what? It's interesting. As I look back, you know, I remember a guy wanted to introduce me to a fellow to sponsor me. And I said, oh, no, that guy, I don't think he would be a good sponsor for me. He's too religious. And that's just sort of a blanket term, overused term that is more ambiguous. It doesn't, you know, it's just overworked, that religious idea. And a lot of people shy away from it. In fact, they emotionally and viscerally just jump back when you talk about religion or if you're talking about a higher power. And so, but for me, not so much. I mean, I thought I knew God. I thought I, you know, just like I know there's an Empire State Building. I've heard about it. I've seen pictures of it. People have told me it's there, but I had never been to the Empire State Building, just like my relationship with God, even though I knew there was a God. And when I was in handcuffs, I'd start praying. I didn't have a relationship with God, but it wasn't a barrier for me.
Today, how do you turn your life over to a higher power?
Well, you know, I learned to develop a relationship with my higher power as a result of working the 12 steps. I had to do this third step, basically, steps two and three on a daily basis because, I'm crazy. And I know that I'm crazy. And so I have to ask a God of my understanding to direct my thinking, and I have to do it on a daily basis because I was a daily user. I mean, all I did was work and use, and so every day I have to start out the day on my knees asking God to help direct my thinking.
So many people shy away from the fourth step as if it's something that's actually going to cause them harm. What's your experience with the fourth and fifth step?
That was very true with me. I'd sit in a meeting and they'd go, well, step four is where the rubber meets the road. And step four was a barrier for me for those first 7-8 years that I was coming in and out of recovery. I thought to myself, you know, why do I have to write this stuff down when I was there? I lived it. And sure as sunshine, when I finally did it and was desperate, to work with a sponsor and write this stuff down, it was profound. It made a big impact on my life. I mean, I felt like a ton of bricks literally had come off my shoulders when I had completed steps four and five. It was great. I really felt like I was in recovery. I was part of the program. And I felt good about my life. And, you know, people talk about pink clouds, but I mean, I had a good feeling for quite some time. Just a real good feeling as a result of completing steps four and five.
Did you ask yourself, why did I wait so long to do this?
Well, absolutely. And of course, you know, now I understand it was my denial. It was my belief, erroneous belief, that I could handle this myself. You know, I didn't embrace the idea that this is a we program. You know, and by myself, I'm in bad company and I'm in trouble. So, but when I got to work and got done with those steps, it really was life-changing for me.
With regard to the sixth and seventh step, do you have a particular practice to keep your character defects in check, Willie?
Well, you know, of course, that's part of the step 10 weaves in there with six and seven, you know. And there again, it's this higher power idea, you know. I start out the morning with steps two and three, and I kind of end it. And even as I go through the day, I'm working a tenth step, and I'm seeing my defects. You know, some of the defects I had, I didn't like female bosses. You know, I didn't care for criticism. I couldn't accept criticism, even constructive criticism I didn't do well with. And these are defects, you know. And when I was entirely ready to have God remove these defects, I again began to understand the importance on a daily basis of my relationship with my higher power.
What is your experience with making nine-step amends?
Well, you know what? Literally, some miracles happened. I had the police in South Phoenix knew my car, and I had a lot of tickets. I was able to pay off several $1,000s in fines. I mean, $5,000-$6,000 in fines. And this was in the late 90s. And, I had child support problems. I had an ex that signed off on $23,000 in child support. So as I was making those nine steps, miracles again were happening to my mind. And believe me, no faith, no miracles. So as my faith began to take root and to grow, in my mind, miracles were happening.
What exactly do you mean by miracles?
Well, I mean things that are just maybe not humanly impossible in these two instances, but highly irregular. Who signs off on $23,000? I mean, if I can get you to pay me $23,000, it's not too likely. I mean, I got to have a good reason to say never mind. Okay, and like I say, the idea of me paying. I mean, I had five driving on a suspended license tickets. The idea that I would pay off and have a legal license to operate a motor vehicle, that's just not the way Willie cared to operate while he was using. And so the change in myself and the change in the world around me was happening. And I call it, to me, those are miracles. A miracle that I'm staying clean on a daily basis. But there again, you can question miracles, and people can argue about, do miracles occur? Are they real? People have written books on the subject. But again, no faith, no miracles.
You mentioned the interaction between the 10th step and your 7th step character defects. Has making your 9th step amends influenced the amends you may make promptly with regard to your 10th step?
Well, absolutely, because, I could see the benefit on keeping the floor swept, in other words, and there again, step 7, humbly ask him to remove my shortcomings. Left to my own devices, I don't get much done. I don't make apologies. I don't admit I'm wrong and so forth. But if I've got this higher power idea in my head throughout the day, I'm much more readily willing to admit, hey, I was wrong, and please accept my apology. I can be wrong today, and when I see other people making mistakes, being wrong, being inconsiderate, rude, whatever, I have to remember I was that same person. I am that same person, because just because I'm clean today does not mean I don't make mistakes. I don't intentionally hurt people, but I do, just as a human being, I'm going to say the wrong thing, do the wrong thing. And so I've got to be willing to, own up to it, to say, hey, listen, I was wrong here. Please forgive me. And when other people make mistakes, I have to understand that, I was wrong. They have a right to be wrong, We need to forgive people, and we need to forgive ourselves, and when the case is such, we need to ask for forgiveness, part of life.
How has your ability to make these amends and admit that you're wrong to others influenced your relationships?
Well, of course, it leads to humility, in my view, and humble people have always been somewhat attractive in my estimation, and people that think they're never wrong, you know how those people are. We all run into those people, and so I can be wrong today, and like I say, I can understand when somebody else makes a mistake. I've just grown in my ability to get along with my fellow travelers here on earth, you know. And so this humility factor, as a result of steps, you know, 7, 9, 10, I think it's growth is what it is. It's growth as a human being, and growth in my ability to you know, love my neighbor, basically, you know.
Willie, with regard to the 11th step, do you have a specific prayer and meditation practice that you engage in?
Well, you know, I do. I set aside some time every morning for prayer and meditation. I've just started some meditation. My prayer and my, you know, like reading my, reading certain books in the morning to get my mind going and focused on my higher power. And so meditation has come a little slower for me, but yes, I do. Every morning I set some time aside to do those things. And if I wake up late, guess what? I'm going to be late because I'm not skipping the prayer and meditation. That's going to get done.
You mentioned reading certain books. Which books specifically are you reading in the morning?
Well, I read Just for Today. I read a 24-hour book. I've got a book from of stuff written by a guy from England, 19th century preacher over there. His name was Spurgeon, Charles Spurgeon. I read a book, Living Streams, so I read that daily. And, you know, I know this is a recovery deal, but I have to admit, you know, that, and I'm not ashamed to admit, I read the Bible daily. So that's what I use in the morning.
A lot of people find, you know, a lot of inspiration from the Bible. We mentioned, you know, prior to the podcast when you were having your espresso about working with others, and I mentioned to you that I did not wait until I had long-term recovery before I was working with others, and you had a great take on that. How has working with others helped you over the years?
Well, you know, not just staying clean and not just coming to meetings and being present, but working with others is kind of that third leg on this three-legged stool, you know. Working with others, whether it's service commitment or whether it's sponsorship, I feel that that's absolutely important. You know, we can't keep it unless we give it away, as I used to say, and you know, in Narcotics Anonymous, one addict working with another, you know, the benefits of that is unparalleled. And so it's like I said earlier, it's a we program, and I need to be present, you know. And even though I have several years of clean time now, I still need to go to meetings. I need to be present, and I need to be available, you know, to the newcomers. And you know what? The truth is, I need those newcomers. They don't need me. I need to hear what it was like. I need to see these people when they come in and when they've got 30 days. And you know, this is great inspiration for me. And, of course, you know, as us old-timers are still hanging around the meetings, the newcomer can see, hey, this is possible. People can get clean and stay clean and be drug-free, you know, and enjoy life.
And what are you doing with your life for fun? Because you mentioned enjoying life. What do you do? I mean, like, a lot of people think they get clean and it's a drag. What do you do that brings you a lot of passion in your life?
Well, you know, I like live music. I like to attend concerts. I also enjoy sporting events. I like dirt track, sprint car racing. Tomorrow we're going to the zoo up in Camp Verde. You know, I've got a wife now. I was single for many years in my early recovery, but somehow I got a wife now, and she's got plans. She's got plans.
They all do. Hope I don't get in trouble for saying that.
Yeah.
Well, Willie, thank you so much for coming over today to this podcast. It was really a blast, and thank you so much.
Well, thank you for asking me, and I really appreciate the opportunity to spend some time with you, Stephen. Thank you very much.
Stephen Gerard is available for sober coaching and consulting by visiting SoberCoachNYC.com, offering additional support, guidance, and motivation for people in all phases of recovery. Just visit SoberCoachNYC.com. That's SoberCoachNYC.com. to set up a complimentary life-changing discussion. Make a decision to change your life.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. If you find this content of value and you'd like to have the podcast delivered directly to your device, please rate, review, and subscribe over on iTunes. This way, each new pod will be delivered directly to you and you won't have to go looking for it. We have some new blogs that may be of interest to you, and you can find those over at www.realdealrecoverypod.com. If you'd like to get a hold of me for any reason, or you'd like to suggest a topic, or if you have any questions pertaining to recovery, you can reach me directly at realdealrecoverypodcast@gmail.com. That's realdealrecoverypodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and remember, recovery is not a spectator sport. Get in the ring.